And the next item on the agenda, Salmon Island EMS Community Paramedicine Report on Subsidy Lady Vote. Ma'am, stage is yours.
Thank you. Well, I do want to thank you guys all very much for your support, both financially as well as the encouragement. Community paramedicine just keeps growing. It may be simply a pilot program, but we sort of started it before the ACH was in helping to fund it, and it grew out of injury prevention. Because our community is so much older and now we no longer have a skilled nursing facility, there are more people aging at home that we, well, community paramedicine, I think of it as a we, and there are lots of people in it, but it's kind of doesn't have a lot of people doing it right now. So the purpose is to limit the expense of 911 calls that are unnecessary, because when people don't know what's right or normal or what to do, often that's all they do know to do, so they dial 911. And the cost of a whole ambulance going out and the dangers of running code and all these things are far more expensive than one person going out with an appointment to help people with the assessments that need to be done. The things that I do mostly, I do home assessments for safety, assess for food insecurity, chronic disease management, so people with diabetes, CHF, assist patients managing their own health care, acute care response, to help reduce the hospitalization, so when somebody's come out of a hospital, sometimes even Peace Health in Bellingham called me and I was shocked, to go and see a patient when they've gone home to make sure that they understand their exit orders, per se. I know that's the wrong term. It helps support family caregivers. A lot of people don't even have family caregivers, so it can help to find assistance. I partner with Family Resource Center, PIMC, Health Department, Friend Island Neighbors, which is a volunteer group through Family Resource Center, the Meals on Wheels Senior Services. It's a huge amount of people that we all work together and often see the same people, some over and over, and some you see them once and move on because that's all they needed. The biggest input that I see in the community paramedicine is sort of, I know it reduces costs, it's the latest, I think it'll be the future of medicine, is seeing people in their homes, helping keep them from 911, but it has grown so much that I'm not quite sure how all the numbers got in there, but what one of the big things that the funds you guys gave us this last year paid for was Gelada. And Gelada is the program that now speaks with ESO so that an EMT or paramedic on an aid call can click a little drop-down box and it sends to me and dings me on my phone that there's a Gelada patient. Gelada is let's see, what would you call it? A multi-functional program that talks to all these different groups and can give referrals back and forth and actually tell you the loop got closed, but it also is HIPAA compliant, it's mental health compliant, and it's even police compliant, which I didn't know they had rules they couldn't say as far as a patient would go, so that it can talk to all these different things. Currently, Gelada and ESO are speaking. Epic is what the hospital's using, and I have to look at them separate and independent. It's a lot of data input to put things in, and you have to put it in for each person. Somehow, in the last, since we've started getting partnerships that actually have the ability to get into it, and Beth is the administrator for the Peace Health portion, at this stage, or the day I looked this up and first wrote it, in my possible patients that are people who meet criteria that might make them vulnerable, not all that I got referred to, are 1,169 patients in our little database. 42 of them have been enrolled. There are some that should have been enrolled or would have been enrolled, and I'm not seeing any more, but we need it for data, which is not my best suit, is numbers. But the 42 that have been enrolled, it's a lot of paperwork and actually computer work. So those 42 I mostly am seeing currently or have seen recently. There are probably about 75 or 80 that should be in there. So my backlog doesn't give me the ability to look up numbers. I actively see between 9 and 12 patients. Some of them are frequent flyers who would keep using the system. So an example is one who had a mental health problem that no one was aware of until, as it happened, because I was out there for another family member. I happened to actually see this break this patient had, an actual psychotic break in front of me, and I was able to actually go to their primary care provider, tell them what I'd seen, get them an appointment, make sure they went over to the appointment, and they're now medicated. But if I don't keep seeing them, they decide they don't need their medication anymore. So I was seeing them once or twice a week. Now I make sure I go in once a month because they keep stopping their medication because they think they're okay. But otherwise, they'd be dialing 911 at much greater expense. There's so many things that can happen. I could tell you lots of patient stories, but they're all over the place. Some patients you can't help. There's a 36-year-old drug addict that was referred to me that I saw a few times, and that drug addict decided that I really wasn't any help because I didn't help. I was asked to help them with medication. They came to me through Family Resource Center for medication reconciliation, and they thought that meant I would get them more drugs. And this was because their doctors had cut them off, and they'd seen all the doctors there were, not only on this island, but they went to Orcas too. Nobody'd write them anything. So those are the ones that you don't really help, but most of them you do help. Most of them have lovely stories, and some of them I've, you know, really found heartwarming. Actually care about these people who would be frightened if we saw how many people are like that. I put down a bunch of costs that might make a difference as far as things that we don't have. So community paramedicine doesn't always use all the same things that EMS uses. So I have a bathroom scale so a CHF patient can get weighed with regularity. We don't weigh our patients in the rig. So an example of things that I actually don't have in the rig but possibly could use would be UTI test strips, because that's a huge problem in the older population, and that's not a big expense. However, there's not a protocol for that at this point. A digital thermometer, which isn't a huge expense, a Doppler, an otoscope. There are all sorts of things, but I really think that keeping ESO Enchilada speaking and hopefully Epic and Eddie. Pathways, and yes, Eddie too. But Pathways was the one I was looking for. So Pathways is the health department's program. If they can all speak together, they save incredible amounts of time because they'll share only the appropriate data to each other. And I suppose I could say I looked up all sorts of things. It told me other countries, and other than Canada, I couldn't find out what other countries that have been doing community paramedicine for a time frame have found a 50% decline in ER admits. And whatever their population basis was. And it can also decrease injuries to EMS because we didn't have to go pick up that extremely large person that didn't really need 911 because we made them understand their medical issues. Any questions? Yes, no?
On your wish list, about $24,000, you're receiving five for it. It's clear you could use a lot more funding for the community paramedicine. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I would think so. None of the things would keep it from functioning, but it would function at a higher level with those items. But the most important items are keeping the gelada and hopefully expanding it. And I don't know what the cost, there would be definite cost to getting Epic and getting Pathways to speak to each other.
The gelada and ESL by themselves is $4,400 a year.
Yeah. At least we can cover that.
Yeah, things like UTI test groups, it seems like it would be tremendous.
So let's start with a motion. That kind of sounded like a motion there, Mark.
If you want to go ahead and make one.
Okay, I proffered the last one. I'll do this. I proffer a motion to yet again grant $5,000 from the San Juan County PhD to the 799 EMS coffers in the name of community paramedicine.
Capital idea, seconded.
And what was the number?
5,000. And I think I heard a second. Did I hear a second, Dr. Mark?
I spoke one.
I'm hearing AJ. Okay, any discussion?
Yeah. So 5,000 would go to what?
To San Juan County EMS program and community paramedicine.
But they have 4,400 just in ongoing subscriptions, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Leaving 500 or 600.
600. It's underfunded is basically what we could say.
It well, that's it. And
that's what we have.
Yeah, that's what we have.
And it was noted earlier, first of all, by Chief Collins, that this is the program of the future under his integrated program or not, and Chief Kusi mentioned that the ACH money, you know, is maybe another 1 or 2 years, and then who knows about that. So it's not like we're really getting ahead, and you know, it's a prototypic program that was in this region started, frankly, by Orcas Fire and Rescue. They were the leaders, and they've since fallen by the wayside, and San Juan Island EMS has taken up the reins in a terrific way, so.
There's another question on financing, and Lane had referenced in earlier discussion about in Oregon that paramedics are involved, and there's a funding for them and a precedent for that. And some involvement with T-cells?
So in Oregon, the hospitals pay the fire departments quarterly for community paramedicine, and the place that I went and rode along for a week, they had two community paramedics. They each worked 4 days a week with 1 day overlapping so that they might see each other's patients if necessary, because people have needs 7 days a week. And I don't know, they have more than one hospital to an area, and I don't know how broad their space was, but they saw no more than four patients in a day. And all the patients were very similar to what patients we see here.
Chief Kutzing, do you have any experience with paramedics with the side letter agreements? That is to say, bargaining unit paramedics with side letter agreements that would fund community paramedicine?
I know of a couple. One comes out of North County, which is the northern part of Snohomish County, where they've worked out a memorandum of understanding with their collective bargaining unit for funding, for having a paramedic be part of the community paramedicine program and still be covered under their union contract. I understand also there's another similar one with South County, which was formerly Snow One. And they have things. I've got some feelers out in terms of how we can do that. The ACH, as that pilot program, again, provides some of that money to help set those programs in place. The concern that we have is, as we've moved forward, is sustainability. Knowing that if this is a pilot program and these funds might help to implement the program, what happens for the longevity of it, and how does that affect the staff who are committing to it? The hope with the ACH is that during this pilot program, they've kind of relaxed a little bit of the reporting mandates that they put out in terms of how specifically is this going to affect Medicare, Medicaid patients and keep them out of the ER. The idea behind that was to see if CMS would be willing to say, we're seeing a cost savings, we'll allow you to bill for service. If that's the case, then usually private insurers follow along, and part of ACH, and then hopefully that would be sustainable. Part of ACH's focus has now shifted to the point of how are we going to secure these alternate funding streams. And their hope is that within the next couple of years, while this pilot program is happening, that we can start looking into those, whether it's the Oregon type model or if it's actual a fee-for-service kinds of model that we can do. So it's encouraging. It's very encouraging, and we're treading cautiously at this point in time. But it certainly seems like as we, Chris and I have looked at the budget and the amendments that we need to make due to some of these other funding streams, that I think we can proceed cautiously but optimistically. And those pieces will start to play out in 2020.
It's one of those programs, once again, that benefits every single taxpayer in the district. Saves visits to emergency departments and all kinds of those side benefits. And 911 calls that could be prevented. So there are a lot of strong pluses here. If you're going to establish a more stable and sizable tax-based funding for your program, that really sounds like a way we should consider evaluating at some point.
And in the past, with a small amount of money, but it's $5,000, last year and the year before, we just said to spend it on community paramedicine without specifically saying would be detailing out any cost. So whichever you feel you need, that's where the $5,000 goes.
Yeah. And I designed the motion to accommodate just that.
Yeah, just
and not that the PhD board needs to be micromanaging the program, which is a dynamic, particularly with the involvement of Fire 3. I mean, you spend it wisely, we trust you, so have at it. Any further comments? Questions?
The UTI test strips and ISTAT. Do you guys bill for this? Do you bill?
No, we don't.
It's like, so an EKG at the house would be free, but if you went to the clinic, it would cost $100.
But it would have to, so I wouldn't go to just anybody's house, though. They'd have to be a patient, and they wouldn't get an EKG without a reason. So it might be a CHF patient who then I call their PCP or the supervising physician at the time and ask a question or even dial 911 because that patient may need to go. So it's not something that's, in Oregon they actually took their little life pack out and they did everything on every single patient consistently, not for the patient's needs, but that's...
Did they have CLIA licenses?
I
or
do not
for lab, you have to be CLIA certified to do certain lab tests.
So...
And there's a certification that the provider has to have.
And that I do know, but I don't know what every... I didn't look at all that during the week when I wrote along what was in somebody's portfolio as far as what they could or could not do. I know that they just... They ran through doing a large amount of things that were standard across every single patient, whether the patient was...
So in the interest of time, we're 3 hours into this meeting and we're halfway through it. So, so again, to not overuse the term sidebar, if you want to... Because Lainey looks tired, too, and... And even her compatriot, Cynthia Stark-Wickman, it looks tired. So, so I call for a.
Yeah, but I can take them upstairs.
I call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm going to abstain. I don't have enough information.
Okay. Motion passes. One abstention. Three yeses.
Why, Cynthia?
Aye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Lainey. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thanks,
and Lainey both.
Yes.
Next on the agenda is San Juan, San Juan County, PhD number one operations and financial report, Pamela Hutchins.
Mm-hmm. You received my reports late Friday evening, so I'm just going to give you a synopsis. They are on the district website ahead of the meeting, so they're already there. We received July total receipts of $50,257. approximate dollars, small tax revenues of $6,796. We did receive the $43,461 finally of the 2011-2012 Healthcare Authority Managed Care Reconciliation that I had told you would be coming. Well, we actually got the money in July. So that made our total cash at the end of July $818,094.57. Disbursements, we had $48,244, and we also paid most of that, $20,000, to the first half of the subsidy to Mount Baker Planned Parenthood after they gave their report and was voted for approval. Then the other part was $28,000, about $244 were the rest of just usual accounts payables. We didn't have any public records requests in July, and so far through today we haven't had any in August either. So we've had 14 total for 2019. You received the financial reports that showed the expenditures, the monthly detail report, the revenues, and the cash balance, of which I just gave the ending cash balance for July. Do you have any questions about the financials?
No.
Okay. Two notes of the financials of importance is the county. We did our budget back in June. We voted in June, but they have been having personnel problems. So those figures in the financials are still 2019 original budget. They have said they promised me they're going to have it 2019 amended budget figures by next month. So when you're comparing those line items, that percentage, that's the same, 2019. And let's see. That's the biggest one to look at for the financials. Operational report. I'm sorry to say we are still trying to get the audiovisual in this room to support microphones to make it easier for the commissioners and the public to hear. We didn't think it was going to be near this difficult to figure this out, but Audio Excellence that did the microphones and everything came and lifted everything, and they decided that there were a couple of ground wires that things were feeding into, that it needs to be all on one ground wire. And Friday Harbor Electric across the street, we found out that they were the one that actually installed the original equipment in 2012 when the building was completed. So they were pretty busy and they couldn't come until September to do that process. So we're still waiting to find some relief.
It's going to be the new board's decision. So it's going to take that long.
It may be. It's very aggravating. Something that you would think would be pretty easy to accomplish is not been.
Not life and death.
It's not been, yeah. So that note, and then the long-term care community-based survey that was went out. It's occurring this month. There was good coverage at the fair. They're having the print copies at each of the senior centers on each island. There's information on our website, EMS website. Ann Presson, the superintendent of Lopez and Orcas, has covered it on theirs. The ending date is August 31st, so all of the phone-in surveys that they completed, and then all of the mail-in and the handed-in copies, I will get back in and mail them to health facilities and planning on August 31st. So it was well covered. So hopefully they got a good percentage when we complete the data for the feasibility study. And then that will give launch our next stage of being able to really kind of come up with some details on what kind of solutions, you know, micro homes, the different things that have been studied. So that's exciting. That should be finished late September, the results from that, and we'll go from there. But, and let's see. Jody Corona will be in Friday Harbor again, September 23rd, and she will be delivering all of that with an in-person meeting with the Inner Island Healthcare Foundation and us. So,
and we'll get notice of that?
We will, yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And that's the highlights in the essence of time. Anybody have any questions? Feel free to
call. That was great.
Call
even though I missed some of it.
Okay.
But are you working Monday?
I am not working Monday.
Thank you, Pam.
Did you want to talk her into it before the
No.
No, that's
no, I tried to talk her out of
it. That's my mother's surprise birthday party. I'm not working Monday.
Okay.
That's right. You just put that on public record.
She doesn't listen to any of that. She's homebound.
The meeting's been going so long, Chris, that the batteries ran out on the recorder.
That's awesome.
She's safe.
Sweet.
Okay, you done, Pam?
I am.
Thank you. Excellent. Okay, next to the agenda, Salmon Island EMS. Chief Kutzing and Chris Kaufman, our advisory CPA.
Good evening, Commissioner.
Yeah, as long as you don't say good morning, I think we'll be okay.
Understood. Okay. Well, just again, my apologies. I had every intention of getting you these reports on Friday afternoon, but that didn't happen. Some of them kind of came piecemeal and a little scattered, and I apologize for that. We've been a bit busy for the last couple of weeks. However, I do have good news for you guys, and I'm just going to kind of basically run through the highlights. Really were 135 calls for July, so 711 total, which is about a 9% increase over last year, which is kind of interesting. Average number of responders, 3.9. Again, this includes paramedics as they respond, as well as staff and volunteers. You can see where we are with medevac things and our response times. Again, we always say that we're within rural benchmarks, which is the definition for our community. Even our town, it's rural benchmarks. That is not something that we want to strive for. That's a 45-minute response time. We can do much better than that. So we break it down, and again, I realize that I had been reporting an 8-minute response time as the urban standard. That is for aid response, not ambulance response. Ambulance response is actually 10 minutes for an urban area. Our town of Friday Harbor does not fit that requirement, but for the most part, if you see, we break it down in town, 71 calls, we're getting 99% of our calls under the 20-minute benchmark. 99% of our calls under the benchmark for a town response. For a suburban response, 82% under 10 minutes, which is the standard for an urban response. So we're doing pretty well that way. Again, we're breaking it down. Overall, 133 calls had data to look at. Average response time of 9 minutes and 57 seconds. So I think we're doing pretty well. Obviously, I would like to see our response times to fit suburban standards. That would be a goal, and I think that we're close to attaining that. Aside from the far south end and the far north end, that's ambitious. Let's say that. But overall, I think we're doing very, very well. Shoot times. We've been talking about shoot times. How is 831, which is our primary ambulance, getting out the door? It's been a difficult process.
to try to get those numbers for you, because as we track it through our medical report writing, we see who goes in route first. That's what usually typically shows up as shoot time. It doesn't matter whether it's 8:31 or if it's a paramedic sprint rate. So it's been difficult. We started looking at our medical report writing software, realized that that was not robust enough to handle that kind of metric. Made contact with the county dispatch between our paramedic Ryan Nelson and our lead dispatcher Robin De Lazerda. They started working, and then Robin assigned the team, and they put up a lot of work in. I've got raw data for you, but what it breaks down to is this. In June, from January to June, the first half of 2019, when we put 24/7 staffing on in-house, our average shoot time, and again, I am not counting when we have multiple calls going on, I'm not counting if we have an extended ETA for an airlift transport, whether it's a transport or a 911 call, I'm looking at just the sheer calls. We're having an average shoot time of 4.2 minutes. Mm-hmm. If you look at that same comparable time frame in 2018 when we didn't have 24/7 staffing, that was 5.8 minutes. So we're basically saving a minute, 1.6 minutes, by having 24/7 staffing, which I think speaks volumes.
Yes.
That's kind of a big deal. What I would propose to you as commissioners, I can continue on with this kind of research if you want me to. It's very time intensive right now. We can get deeper into the data, but I can start to eliminate, you know, extended wait times for airlift calls. I can start doing all that, but I'm wondering if it's that, if you feel it's worth it, whether you want me to mine deeper into the data or continue on mining the data. The other possibility, in my mind, I was thinking maybe I can do the last 6 months at the end of the year, and we'll do a comparison that way, rather than kind of give you these monthly times.
I would just do it periodically, unless the board differs. Because, you know, the confidence level is going to be darn good as long as you show the basic trend, and that is that you diminish the time having in-house folks. I mean, that's the entire argument right there.
That's my thought.
And right now you're drowning in meetings on the other things.
Yeah.
You don't need to spend the time on something like this.
Understood. Well, we'll reevaluate that maybe a couple months down the line as things are moving along at the end of the quarter. I'm not going to get too far into the financials because we do have our report for our 2019 amended budget. Needless to say, our revenues for this month, and looking at year to date, we're 58% into the year. We've collected, our revenues are 54% of budget projections, and our expenses are right on target with 58, so we haven't quite got
that's all based on the amended budget that we're presenting.
Okay.
Understood.
Right? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
And our GEMT is, you can see, way over what we had projected in the budget. And that is in part due to the fact that we had the retroactive payment from 2017. The $400,000 plus change that we were promised by the HCA. Of the five managed care providers, we've collected from four. The Molina, which is the largest one, is still pending. So we're looking at seeing it basically about $230,000 still to come from Molina. It's been able to, and I won't get too far into it, but as we look at our amended budget, that's putting us back on track for reserves, for capital reserves, ambulance replacement, rig replacement. We can refund those things and have those reserve funds ready to go, and puts us back on track. There was a period of time 4 or 5 years ago when it was looking a bit dismal, and this windfall from the GEMT, I think, helps stabilize our financials and puts us back where we want to be. Some of the other highlights that I can go over, just really in terms of our operations, the biggest thing is that we've been working with Chief Collins and Fire 3 and our interoperability. We're already trying to put pieces in place, as we alluded to in the work session, that we're trying to get to the point where we're using a common radio frequency, that we are establishing good command on scenes for, you know, difficult scenes. I also highlighted that we had the license renewal process is right on track. We're looking good with that and moving forward with that. We have meetings with our medical protocols is something that we've been reporting. Obviously, the ALS protocols are on hold until we get Dr. Corsa up to speed. We'll get those revisions done. There is also, that came down from the state, some of the skills that BLS providers can do have changed, including nebulized albuterol as an EMTB basic skill, delivery of that, and trying to think what the other one was, CPAP, but we already have CPAP in our protocols, which is continuous positive airway pressure delivery. So there are a few protocols that the state has changed for BLS providers and ALS providers. Ooh. That will need amended protocols for the BLS and the ALS, but Dr. Corse is on board with that. He is due to be here I think he comes in Monday night to the county. He's committed to being on the islands through the 5th of September. I think we're going to be able to have him all to ourselves for the afternoon evening on the 3rd. We're hoping to kind of schedule a dinner with him so that it's our off Tuesday, not normal training night, have our EMTs meet Dr. Corsa and get to know him a little bit better. The following day, the Wednesday, we've adjusted our county trauma council meeting. There's time scheduled with Katie Holstein from Department of Health to kind of brief Dr. Corsa on what his job is. Then Katie Holstein is going to be talking to the county trauma council itself and give some insights for us in terms of trending and operations in terms of at a county level. And then finally, we'll have our regular county trauma council members. I'm due to go off Wednesday the 5th down to Seattle for an ESO, which is our medical report writing software. There's a user's work group. So hopefully I'll maybe learn a little more data mining that might come into play later on. I'm not going to get too far into community paramedicine or integration. You've kind of heard reports with that already. The last thing I really have on my agenda is to kind of follow up on the report about outreach. We talked a little bit about the fact that we kind of needed some clerical help with that, our outreach program, which includes community paramedicine and our public education components. The conclusion that, or the recommendation that we came up with, or that I put forward last meeting, was that we seriously look at hiring a part-time clerk, a person who can help with some of the administrative work, calendars, scheduling, basically correspondence, follow-up with vendors. We can also utilize in other parts of our normal 911 operation, whether that's, you know, ordering, follow-up, all that, kind of laid that out. What I did in this secondary report is actually look at some money. I think the biggest thing that I can present to you is, as we have money allocated for Director Bolt as our community outreach person, I believe at this time it's fair to say at least half of her time is spent community paramedicine. So it's time to release some of those funds that have been coming from the ACH and say, let's use that funding to pay half of her salary. That frees up the remaining half, and we can use that to fully fund a half-time clerical person, and would like to be able to do that. It also leaves us kind of a cushion, a reserve fund, where money that's allocated for ACH can also be used for this, as if we find that more time needs to be involved with it. It also, we also have some of that GEMT windfall to kind of help us push it if we find that we need to. But I, at this point in time, just in, the, in simply paying half of Laney's salary through the ACH-funded money for community paramedicine, we free up the other half to fully fund a half-time person. So my recommendation moving forward is to go ahead and hire that person, put it out there within our organization to see if there's anybody interested in applying for that position, anybody's qualified. At the same time, since we're, in Chief Collins's words, contemplating togetherness, to maybe put to put that out to the fire department as well to see if there is somebody, because as Chief Collins and I have been talking, as we move toward full integration, it's our belief that they're going to ramp up their community risk reduction program, and the need for that clerical piece will be present in the fire side as well, and this could very easily morph into a full-time position. Are there any questions?
Yeah, it seems like we need to discuss the budget and wait for that discussion before we consider any motion.
Understood.
Regarding this. But the one thing concerning the second.
So this is also in the budget, isn't it?
As we propose that amended budget, yeah, we made that.
That's baked in.
Yeah, I just thought we'd review that before.
Understood.
Hearing a motion for it. And also, the North Sound ACH funding, you said, is 2 years and uncertain after that, is that correct?
That's correct.
And that would be the funding for this position?
Yeah, that we can use at this, yeah, at this time for the next 2 years, yes.
So that a motion might entail a limit on the position to 2 years for the duration of the funding?
I think we could consider that. However, in my... my analysis of what's been going on with community paramedicine funding, I feel pretty confident that alternative revenue streams are going to be discovered, that we'll be able to keep moving forward, and we wouldn't have to necessarily limit this position, that I think those alternate funding streams will come to fruition, and we can continue to make this a long-term position.
So the position itself is on the order of $30,000 a year. Is that correct?
For half time, yes. Uh-huh. And I'm being conservative with that. I mean, we looked at a salary range of anywhere between $18 and $22 per hour. We don't necessarily have to supply benefits for a part time person, but would like to be able to do that. And given where we are with our amended budget, I think we've managed to figure that out.
So once again, we'll need to look at the budget before we...
Absolutely.
And I guess my main consideration is where is the ongoing funding coming from? I mean, I can't say, yes, I feel comfortable that we will find money at, in 3 years. I don't know. Maybe we'll be like we were 3 years ago, where, you know, there's a drop of money.
And to that, you know, maybe what we do is we say, let's do it for the 2 years that we know that ACH is going on, and that it needs to be reviewed again. The concern, again, for us is the workload that we've got. We're getting to the point where we're getting burnout, and I feel like we really desperately need to have the support to make sure that we can keep doing what we want to do and how we want to serve our community. And if we want to put that caveat on there that we reevaluate this in 2 years and we kind of cap it, I'm more than happy with that. I would much rather do that than to say, no, let's not fund it because we don't know the longevity of it.
Of course, the other side of that is if you do that, then you've got somebody who's saying, wait a minute, this job's only 2 years. You know, it's going to end maybe. So,
that's,
you know,
true.
There's all those issues. So,
that's true.
Well, but I think, and the other one thing to think about is that this, you know, if you look at how staff have been used historically here, and where our budget is, I mean, there may be, I mean, especially as if there's a shift towards integration, I mean, there's got to be some, there could be some changes and changing of responsibilities and stuff over that time, too.
Oh, sure.
So, I mean, and when things were really tight, it's important to note that we also had significant expenditures related to things. And also, you know, major loss of revenue through for accounts management, things like that, a lot of costs with exiting the air program, all that kind of stuff that just wore everything down. And we've, I think, over the 3 years, there's been a lot of stability brought about just through wise budget management. Before all this other money really started coming in, we were getting a little more positive, so.
Okay, well, like Mark said, we gotta work through the budget before we add anything, so.
So just staying with the ops report here, the 2019 EMT class, so three still waiting to take the test. It doesn't get easier as time goes by.
That's true, and I think of those three, one had, it was a paperwork problem where instead of being able to apply online, which is the norm, it ended up having to be a more form of written submission. Another one of those EMTs is a seasonal kind of kayak guide, and it's turned into a busy season. He's kind of hoping to let things settle down before he actually schedules the test. I'm trying to remember where the third person is in terms of, oh, there was a family emergency that came up. I believe it was a death in the family that she was kind of forced to deal with. So those three are kind of our last holdouts.
Do we have a deadline on that? That was one of my questions.
You know, I would have to double check with Wichelle as the training person that the SEI did.
And one other question I had with regard to the helipad subject. It hasn't been moving forward. I'm wondering if you and Chief Collins have had discussions about that and are in a position of expressing an opinion concerning the placement of the helipad adjacent to the ED.
We haven't, just only on a very cursory level. The comments that Chief Collins had were like, that's kind of the norm that he's used to, from where he's coming from. Hospitals have helipads. But that's about as far as we've gone. It has definitely been a back burner kind of issue for us.
Would you be willing to front burner for a short letter of support, or expressing your perspective, we'll put it that way?
I'm perfectly willing to do that. I can check with Chief Collins and see if he's willing to.
Okay, thank you.
Am I getting lower to the ground?
Yes, you are.
I feel like I am.
I know, it's.
And I'm meeting in front of people, and I apologize for that. I ran out of gas an hour ago, so. Okay, are you done?
I'm done. Unless you have any more for me.
And Chris, you're going to speak about the amended budget, right? And not now? Okay, very good.